I've generated over $1 billion in sales using one strategy. I used it in every recession, so 2000, 2009, and 2020. This thread might make you a millionaire. What is this one strategy that will make me a millionaire?
COVID hit. I was sitting there like looking at my screen with like a massive, like seven-figure losses every day. All I could think about is, what do I buy? So all I'm doing is sitting there and buying everything, right? I went all in.
It's Val Kataev.
Four-time tech entrepreneur and the founder of Poise Venture.
You ended up crossing $1 million before you turned 20, and you crossed $100 million shortly after your 30th birthday.
I had the insight that during these recessionary periods, it's like an opportune time. There's opportunity.
There's literally research that's been done that companies that have invested into marketing specifically during downtimes come out way better than everybody else who pulled back.
How do you action on the insight? If I'm a college kid, if I'm working a job, I want to go all in on that business. How do I know where to focus the energy?
You know, I know it's going to sound cliche, but like you kind of have to just...
We spoke about, you know, there's some periods where you go on offense, there's some periods where you go on defense. Like what kind of season do you think we're in?
Look, I think that no matter what age you are, you should...
I wanted to just like cut the suspense just straight off the bat and just get into it. What is this one strategy that will make me a millionaire?
Invest or lean in bad markets because everybody is pulling back. And it's not just me. I've done it my whole life without actually like researching it. But once, years later, when I start writing a thread and I start looking into research to back it up, so it's not just like Val just saying that, you know, maybe it works for him. Like there's literally research that's been done that shows that companies that have invested into marketing specifically during downtimes come out way better than everybody else who pulled back. Because typically marketing is the first thing everybody cuts, right? Like, oh man, like things are going to be bad. Like recession is coming. First thing you do is like, because the easiest thing to cut, marketing, right? And I've just by my nature did that the opposite my whole life. And it just turned out to be the right move. Not that I'm a genius, but like that, you know, that's what worked. And it turns out there's research actually to back it up that's what, you know, and that makes a lot of sense because what happens is when everybody pulls back, let's just say you're just a local, store, right? I work with like jewelry stores now. Like that's my company I'm building now, right? So I work with local family owned jewelry stores, right? So if you're a local store and all your competition is pulling back on their marketing, right? The demand for that supply goes down, so the costs come down. Not only that, there's also the market share of like your share of voice in that market goes up. So if you even stick to your budget and everybody drops it, your share of voice goes up. But because typically you could get better advertising costs, you could actually get even more impressions or more advertising done with that same budget. But the people who like I personally would like ramp it up because things are cheaper on like on a CPM basis or whatever. I ramp it up, right? Now I'm just like dwarfing everybody else in the market, right? Or in the category or whatever you're working on. So I mean that's always been my strategy, and like I wrote a whole thread about it. It turns out that was like there's a thing behind it. And I actually had a couple of people, like a couple of professors reaching out to me asking if they could use it, or they already use it, or some were asking if they could use it in their curriculum. So that thread actually has been like using some business schools and stuff.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
No, that is really cool. And you know what? When you explain
it. Pretty cool for a guy who dropped out of college, you know what I
mean? It's like a bit ironic, isn't it?
Yeah, it is pretty ironic.
Now you're in college curriculums. It's like, nice. Yeah. The thing is, it makes, when you explain it and the way that you frame it, it makes complete sense though. And I love this point that this was one of the tweets actually that you had in the thread where you said, during boom periods, CMOs take over and businesses play on offense. They focus on growth. During recessions, CFOs take over and businesses play on defense. They start to cut costs. So it's like, and it even reminds me of that, I think I always attribute it to Warren Buffett. The quote of like, be greedy when others are fearful and fearful when people are greedy, which is like, it's almost like zig when they zag.
Yeah.
Is the mindset. I'm curious because obviously with your background, like, you've been successful in different fields and growing businesses. You've done like, you've bootstrapped companies to like $100 million, right? Where did that mindset, you kind of already alluded to it, that like, that framework of like zig when they zag, like do the opposite of what everyone else is doing. What's the context for that? Like, where did that mindset begin with you? Okay. We spend 50% of our time at work, so it's critical that you enjoy your work. That said, the sponsor of today's show, Free Agency, is going to help you do just that and be properly compensated for it. Free Agency represents and manages talent in the tech industry. They provide you with a dedicated talent agent that will help you find and win top of market roles. So if you're looking to build your dream career today, go to the link in my description. I've hooked you up. I've helped you out. Use Free Agency. You will not regret it.
I don't know. That's a good question. I think just like, I like to say this like a lot, like my curiosity just kind of led me to a lot of things. And if I'm like, and I feel like this is the way, this is something I want to find out. I'm just going to go for it. And it doesn't matter what's going on around me, whether it's economy or what my friends are doing or what people are at the trade shows are doing or what the media is writing or the industry media, right? Like I always have blinders on. So a lot of times I end up doing my own thing because I'm just like not even paying attention to everything going on around me. So I don't know if it's like purposely that way. And it helps a lot, like not in just marketing or sometimes even like trading. I don't even trade a lot, but like when COVID hit, right? March 2020, April 2020, I was sitting there like looking at my screen with like a massive, like 7-figure losses every day. All I could think about is, what do I buy? Like, so all I'm doing is sitting there and buying everything, right? Mm. I went all in. I like maxed out my margin. And when everybody's like, hey, it's doomsday, right? Everybody's like in doomsday scenario. I'm here like, and I don't know what, I think it was just like, I was kind of prepared for that. I was been kind of waiting, not for COVID, but I was waiting for a good time to get it, you know, maximize, you know, get myself further into the market. And the market has been so good for years and years and years. So I was like just prepared to do the opposite of what everybody was doing because it doesn't matter what everybody's doing. I've already been prepared for that moment for the last 10 years, you know, to execute on that. Mm. Same thing 2008, you know, the Great Recession and all.
Mm. You know, it's so interesting, right? Because, and even with these times where like, I think for a lot of people, it's feeling like we're going into recession, like it's feeling, and across different industries, like it feels like there's just less money out there. People aren't spending as much. They're being a bit more conservative. And so to have the mindset of when everyone is going conservative, to be the one person that's like just going after it and playing on offense, it's like difficult to do. Like psychologically for you, like was there, even for COVID, right? Because COVID was a situation where it was unprecedented.
Right.
And like, I think we forget it now because we're in 2023 about to head into 2024. But in the heart of COVID in 2020, there was questions of like, will things ever go back to what they were before?
Right.
So I'm curious for you, like whenever you're in these kind of recessionary periods, is there any sort of mental like difficulty in being like, I'm going to go on offense? Like, is there not a thought of like, oh, maybe this time it's different. Maybe I should actually be a bit more defensive.
Scarily, it's not. Like, I have to kind of like sometimes ask somebody to talk to me like, hold on, am I too crazy, you know, doing this?
Yeah.
Does somebody try to talk me out of this? And usually they can't. So no, I'm not really worried usually about these things. Those decisions are scary. I mean, you talk about CFOs versus CMOs, right? CFOs are always the defensive ones. CMOs are, it's their job. It's their job to be on the go on the offensive to grow the business, right? So that's why during recessions, you know, you call your CFO and it's like, man, how do we protect the business? So it is tough, and you know, we see, like this year actually, we see it firsthand. Like I've been pushing everybody from the beginning of the year. Again, like all these independent jewelers that we represent, right? Like, from the beginning of the year, we noticed that they're starting to get worried about, hey, 23 is not going to be like 22, right? With everybody pulling back on the dollars and the spends, all that free flowing money is no longer there. You know, these owners got worried, start getting worried. And the first thing they do is like, let's pull back on the marketing, right? I was saying from the beginning, I was like, hey, trust me, you want to do the opposite. Now, some people did it that way, and some people didn't, right? And I get it. Like, it's a tough decision, like when you got, you know, bills to pay. And we're actually now seeing the big difference. It's like the stores that have been leaning in on the marketing throughout the year, even through the tougher times, like the summer is pretty slow, especially for jewelers. The ones who have been leaning in throughout the year are now like up 20-30% over last year, which is crazy because last year was still like 21-22 for the jewelry industry was amazing. People couldn't travel and they had all this free money and they're just like spending it on diamonds, right? It's now we're in 23. That's not the case anymore. So you got to really work to get that the business working. And like we're seeing the people who actually like increase their marketing efforts are beating last year numbers, and the people who pull back seeing the opposite. So I'm seeing that like working right, especially now. Like we're about to enter December. Like we're already kind of in the middle of the holiday season now. We're definitely seeing the difference between the two buckets of retailers.
Yeah, you know what? I think there's certain people that are listening, and as they listen to you speak and explain this stuff, they're getting excited. And here's the reason why, which is like, if I'm in any kind of like transition point in my life, I just want to make a switch and like start going all in on something. I want to start building a business. I want to significantly increase the amount of resources and wealth that I'm playing with and that I have and my capacity. I think it's always a bit of a dampener when you hear people talking about recessions. Like people kind of feel like, oh, I have to put my plans on hold. This isn't the time to like leave my job and do the business. Or if I'm a college kid that's graduating from university, it's like, oh, great. Now I have to enter the job market in a recession.
Yeah.
And so when someone like you is like, actually, I go on offense in the recession, it's exciting. But we need to, I want to add another component to it, which is you've had the insight that during these recessionary periods, it's like an opportune time. There's opportunity. So you've had the insight. Step two, I feel like, is how do you action on the insight? And you've been able to do it very well in like three distinct periods. Like you've kind of, in a way, like you've proven incredibly successful at being able to capitalize in these recessionary periods. And so I want to go deeper into your mindset in terms of like, you know that there's an opportunity, but in terms of the specifics of how you figure out the strategy, what you're actually going to do to capitalize, like how do you think about that? Like how do I, if I'm a college kid, if I'm working a job and I'm thinking, okay, I want to, been saving up a bit, I want to go all in on that business, how do I know where to focus the energy?
You know, I know it's going to sound cliche, but like you kind of have to just like follow what you're interested in. You know, it's hard to push yourself and just push your career and your like entrepreneurial drive if you're trying to do something you're not interested in. It's just like, it just doesn't feel like natural, right? When it feels natural, it goes like super smooth. Like it doesn't even feel like work. So for me, I was doing stuff that I was just like enjoyed doing. So it didn't matter to me. I was going to sleep at 6-7 o'clock in the morning, you know? And then I wake up just to just to see the results of what I did the day before. Didn't feel like work. It just felt like, you know, I actually kind of felt fun, right? Mm-hmm. So when you make a decision on what to focus on, like just like think about what you like. And like if you're great at something, and no matter what it is, there is a demand and need for almost anything out there, like in terms of services or products. I would say recession is actually a great time to learn, right? Because like, yes, money is not being thrown around easily, but this is the time you like learn a skill or learn how to do something. learn from like the best people out there, you know, shadow them. And yeah, I just saw strip mall guy. I don't know if you saw this tweet he did. He posted something about like, hey, you know, like it's crazy. Like I see these when I see grad, I get like all these applications of people submitting for job applications. Mm. And I don't know if you meant like graduate school graduates or bachelor graduates, but when you know we have a $70,000 salary and they're going to learn a lot and they do a lot of work. And it's like, usually everybody's response is it's too little money for too much work. Right. And for me, it's like, okay, when you do too much work, meaning you do a lot of different things, a lot of different responsibilities, that's what how you learn. Because like, yes, you finish school and you could do just this part, right? But if you're thrown into a situation where you got to do your this part, and they show you how to do this and that, especially those professionals who've done this very successfully, right? Like strip mall guy, I'm not going to mention his actual name. You know, he's very successful at doing his, you know, building a fund that manages strip malls. And so if you come in here with this knowledge base, but now you learn how to do this and that and this, like you're so much more well-rounded. And that's when you could build your own business, because you're no longer just an employee doing one, you're not just a role player. You're like a full package. When you're a full package, you're super valuable to somebody, or you're super valuable to yourself, where you could actually, you know, hop off and build your own thing. So I think in the recessions is a perfect time to like build yourself in terms of like knowledge and just learning like what to do, because it's always the same pendulum, right? When things come around, you could now deploy that knowledge and make the best use of it. Like you're ready, just like what I was saying earlier. Well, just like I was ready to get deeper into the market, right? I was just sitting and waiting for the right moment. Like you just build yourself up that knowledge base to attack when the markets come up or when the recession is over. Although we're not really in a recession right now, but you know, when times are great, like you have something to attack with.
Yeah. You know what's interesting? I like the distinction that you made, because I think when we talk about like going all in or playing on offense, people think about it, and even I did this, people think about it mainly in terms of like money. Like, oh, I'm just going to spend. Like that's almost what you're saying. Oh, I'm going to spend more money when everyone else isn't. But to your point, it isn't just that. You could be going all in on like knowledge of there's this thing that I'm super interested in, and I'm just really going to like do the actions to learn more and like actually take up more roles. And you know what's I thought of this analogy as you said, you spoke about like role players, and like I watch a lot of the NBA, like basketball, and I follow LeBron a lot. Like I'm a Lakers fan. And so you'll see on the teams he's on, it's like usually it's LeBron and then it's a bunch of role players.
He's a game changer. Every time he comes on a team, it's a game changer. Like he's the guy who
he is the system.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the reason why is like, and it's exactly what you were saying, which is he's not just good at one thing. The role players are typically like, they're really good at defense, but like they can't really score. Or they're really good at shooting, but they can't really defend that well. Like they're typically good at like one skill.
Yeah.
LeBron is like an incredible passer, shoots. He's not an incredible shooter, but he shoots threes. He can lay it up, he can score, he can defend someone one-on-one. And so when you talk about knowledge and preparation, that's kind of it. It's like you're adding all of these different skill sets. And then when your time is there, you can capitalize.
It's a perfect analogy. I mean, LeBron is like a very high IQ player, very strong mindset. You know, I think that's the game. Like, yes, he's physically gifted, right? Mm. But, you know, I'm sure a lot of that was also how much preparation he, you know, or how much work he's done to be that, you know, even, yes, you're physically gifted, you know, genetically, but you could, you know, he's definitely working on himself all the time as well, right? Mm. But his mindset is just a different level, like just on a different level. And I think that people don't realize how strong your mind is to make a difference in your life or people around you.
Mm. You know, we had a call like a couple of days ago, and you said something to me. We're on this call and we were talking about, you know, potentially what we would discuss in this episode. You said something to me that was so interesting. And as we were speaking on the phone, I was like, okay, let me write this shit down. Like I need to get this shit down. Here's what you said. You said, if you want to get rich, look for places where things are being reset. that is where the opportunity is. I feel like that almost kind of feeds into what you were saying about recessions as well. Like, look for the opportunities where people, like, what are people not doing right now? And so can you talk about that? Like, what does that mean? Look for places where things are being reset.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I'll give you an example of today, but, you know, also in the past, right? Like, just if you ever watch the movie, read a book, Gone with the Wind, right? They're showing life of somebody who was came, you know, was in wealth, right, and has like a farm or a plantation or whatever it is in the South, right? And they have a mansion and she lives, and then all of a sudden the war just changes everything, right? And the guy who was like kind of chasing her or whatever, he was taking advantage of that because he was making money, because like he was a nobody before, right? And now the war reset everything. That guy is now like somebody, and she's just barely making it through, right? And she's the one who comes from old money. I feel like there's always that going on, and hopefully we don't have any wars like that that reset to that degree. But there's always something going on. Like, there's always some kind of reset, right? Maybe not such a macro, but let's look at like Twitter, like Elon Musk coming in and essentially resetting what Twitter or X is now. That's an opportunity for, like, for me, like, I don't use it, but I know there's something there. Like, just watching it, and all of a sudden watching what ads show up in my feed, and just, I was playing around with some ads and seeing what kind of costs there are. Like, they're super inexpensive. And for somebody who's made a ton from just, like, arbitraging advertising, somebody's making a killing on there, and they're not talking about it. Right, just based on the ads I'm seeing in the feeds, like, because it's a lot of direct response ads. A lot of advertisers kind of moved away for whatever reason, whatever they may think of him, whatever things he said. there are a bunch of people just making a ton of money there because the costs of that advertising space became lower, and there's still a certain level of engagement. And whenever you see direct response ads, like performance ads, anywhere, to me, that's just like screaming signal that there is a delta between the value of the advertising space or the supply and how much you could actually generate in revenue or profit on a performance basis. So somebody is definitely meeting that, you know, closing that gap and making a lot of money. I think there's a big opportunity there. I just you know, somebody who doesn't have enough things on my plate, but like I haven't touched it, but it's interesting actually, like how that changed over the last 12 months.
Yeah. No, I love that example because I remember during that period, and we're still going through that period. I think I've seen articles this week of people asking Elon about like the advertisers like leaving Twitter. And it's like everyone sees, oh, like a bunch of advertisers, like big names, like big brands are leaving Twitter. Like, oh, it's over. And I remember that was the conversation. It's like, Elon gonna tank Twitter? Like, is it just gonna go to zero? But then the way that you're thinking, you're like, oh, there's opportunity. There's opportunity now. I'm curious, because I think the way that you think about it will be incredibly beneficial to people. So let's say, obviously you have like a ton of different things that you're doing, and we'll get into that. But let's say that you had all the time in the world. You see this reset happening on Twitter. You have all the time in the world right now to kind of capitalize on it, to go in on it. So you've noticed that there's an opportunity here. What would be like, if you were going to do it, what would be the steps? Like, what would be the first thing that you would do to kind of start building out a strategy of like, you could win against this?
I would say that I would reach out to all the companies who are always looking for influencers, and they're paying them a commission for driving sales or whatever they're selling, right? I would say I'm an influencer, right? But the reality is I'll be an influencer who's actually buying my reach, because I suck at like getting natural reach, right? Like, yeah. I'm not...
like organic.
I'm not the organic guy. Like, I'd rather buy it because I control it. I don't want to wait for it. I'm too impatient for getting organic reach. I want to turn the ad on. And Twitter is awesome. Like, I actually played around with it. You turn it on and it's like a fire hose of impressions and people and clicks right away, right? So I rather get a few of those influencer like marketing products or services and just test all of them. Probably do it in a few nights, right? Like, because you could turn it on and right away see the results. What is working, what is not. You turn off what's not working, keep going with the what is working. You had a guest on the podcast like recently. What was his name?
The guy
also, he was in the advertising and doing e-commerce.
Dantes,
yeah, really smart young guy. I mean, he was talking about like how he does that today. I mean, he's much younger than me. Like, this is what I used to do back in the when I was young as well.
Yeah.
I think he's gonna be he sounds like he's already successful, but he's just like, he's gonna
run it. Somebody, up. Yeah.
People should watch that episode if they haven't already. But I thought you could learn a lot from that. But yeah, you just like, you try all these different advertisers or try different strategies. And then, because you could always turn off what's not working. Right, but what is working, once that's working, like, you could just 10x, 100x, 1000x. There's no limit to the upside. The limit to the downside is just 1x. Right, but the upside is, so you could try 50 different things. You just need one to work. Because you take that one, you'll make 1000 times over. Then, you know, you only lost 50 times, right? So it's just a numbers game at the end of the day.
Yeah, so the framework is almost like, and I've seen, it's interesting being in this vantage point because I speak to a lot of entrepreneurs and you start to put together the patterns of how they think. And so the thinking that's kind of underlying that is, in the beginning, you're kind of experimenting. So you're just trying different things, right? You're like looking for signal. The second you find something which is like an outlier, like it just works.
Yeah.
All in on that. Exactly. And then you can rapidly scale the spend, I guess.
And while you're doing that, keep looking for more outliers, right? Don't stop, right? So, because like once you can max that out, you're gonna need like, all right, let me go back to my, my war room. Let me see what else I got next. Like, yeah. Oh, okay, this looks nice. Let's now start scaling that up. So now you got two things that are just kicking ass, right?
Yeah. Okay. You know what? I'm curious because there's gonna be someone that listens to this and actually like does this shit and then probably reaches out to both of us. So Twitter, so you'd go to companies that are working with influencers, and what would, because I think this kind of loops back nicely into your story as well. What is the pitch to them to let you, like, is it, give me like a small portion of your budget. I know how to deploy that against Twitter. I think that this is like really underpriced right now. And, you know, the results, like you'll see the results. Like, what's the pitch to them?
I wouldn't even waste my time with a pitch. Like a lot of these guys have like, you know, affiliate programs, associate programs, influencer programs, they're pre-built, right? So you kind of want to save your time not trying to negotiate with each one of them one by one. You go after the ones who already have these successful programs, right? Just sign up to them. You're going to have to like have a reason, you know, so it's not fraud or whatever. So you have to have some kind of presence in terms of like, believe, you know, so that you're believable, right? So that you're not like just trying to send fraudulent traffic. So you just sign up to those and it just allows you to test a lot faster. Now the ones that work, and once you start driving traffic to them, then you go to negotiate with them. You're going to be on their radar. The moment you start sending 50x, 100x, 1000x, trust me, they're going to reach out to you.
Who is this?
Yeah, like what's going on here? Like they're definitely going to reach out to you and then you could, you know, you could negotiate for better terms. And yeah, I would, at one point when once I scaled, I would get paid like 3-4 times more than everybody else. So they might start you off at say 5% or 10%, right? But then once you got that volume and they don't want to lose it, you know, like who has the margin, who doesn't, and you can negotiate to get higher payouts from them later on. But I wouldn't waste time on doing that in the beginning because like it's not going to work. Like there's no point. Sometimes you you find something that works, but not like amazingly well, right? But you're like, all right, it works. And I'm still losing money. But if I could get double what I'm getting right now, it's going to become profitable. So you kind of say, all right, I'm not going to scale it up yet. Maybe I'll scale up very little bit. Then you go to them and say, hey, like I can't continue this unless I get a better bounty or a better payout. And a lot of times you could get that. And then once you get that, and it's like, boom, you're off to the races.
Okay, so you know what? I want to talk slightly a bit more through like the mechanics. So when you say that their influencer or like their affiliate even like programs are pretty built, I don't know this, but I'm assuming the way it works is that like I've seen with Amazon, you can actually, you can generate a link, like an affiliate link.
Yeah.
And if people purchase through that link, you'll get like a small percentage of the sale.
Yeah.
So is that kind of what you're speaking to, where like I could just go on whatever the company is, their website, generate an affiliate link, and then I have my personal account on Twitter, and then if I can run ads against like a tweet or something that I know will generate traffic, drive it to that link, I can start making money pretty much instantly just based off that traffic. And then if I scale that even more, then the actual company themselves is going to be able to see in their analytics and be like, this guy is contributing a crazy amount of sales. And then you're going to get like your own kind of custom deal with that company. Is that
Yeah, basically. So like, I mean, Amazon is not going to give you a custom deal, but yeah. You know, a lot of other companies will. And what you want to do is like, you don't want to just rely on a tracking link, because those tracking links a lot of times like don't track very well.
Mm-hmm.
Or you don't want to send somebody click and then they go buy something from a different browser and doesn't get tracked. So what you get eventually with these, like especially with like influencer programs, a lot of times you'll get like a special discount code that's like unique to you. So when people use that code, you get paid, right? As, mm-hmm. as opposed to relying on like cookies and all the like technology kind of based tracking. So I think that's what you want. Like you want to make sure you get paid for whatever business you drove to that client or to that service.
Yeah. No, that is genius. Okay. I want to, and the reason I say it's genius is because like you don't need a lot of ideas. It feels like you need money to make it work. Like a lot of like entrepreneurs will say like different ideas like people could do, but it's like, oh yeah, like if I had a million, I could do that. But yeah. Like you can just guess, like anyone in theory could start just doing this right now.
Yeah. I mean, look, if you want to do with paid ads, you need a little bit of money.
Yeah.
The first time I did this, when I came across this whole thing, I actually lost $5,000. I was 17 years old, I think, and like 18 years old or something like that. And the first time I tried this, I actually lost $5,000 overnight.
Mm.
And that's like, at the time, I mean, I was, for a high school kid, I was doing pretty good. Like, but $5,000 is a lot. Like that was a full month's income, right? So back in the days, they didn't have like spending caps. When you had like for paid search advertising,
yeah,
no caps. So like I just put it on and I went to sleep,
and then it just kept.
I woke up. I was down $5,000. Actually, I spent $6,000 and I only got like $1,000 of revenue.
Yeah,
I lost $5,000 just literally overnight. The big thing is was like I wasn't. This is like you're asking me about like why. This is where the mindset comes in, right? It wasn't to me about like I lost $5,000. It was about, wait, I generated $1,000 in revenue, right?
Yeah.
So if I thought, okay, I lost $5,000, I'm never doing this again, I wouldn't be sitting like here today and telling you about my story. But I looked at it as, man, $1,000, how did I generate that $1,000?
Mm.
Right? So I went back to optimization and I figured out how to make that $1,000 work. And so that I could like just spend what worked like to generate that $1,000. And luckily I was able to figure that out. And just did that like with 800 different brands and advertisers.
Yeah.
So it's all about the mindset. Like you can't just give up on something and like not look at the opportunities that might be there.
Mm.
It's like I always think about it as there's a conveyor belt of opportunities, right? Like there's a conveyor belt, and if you're ready for it, like something is an opportunity is going to come on that conveyor belt sooner or later. It's all about whether you're ready to identify that opportunity and reach out and grab it. So that's kind of like what life is. Like it's a conveyor belt. It's just like things are going to be passing by, right? And at some point, something very good comes along. A lot of people say like, oh man, like I have no luck in life. A lot of people also let those opportunities just pass by. And then there are people who kind of like they're either ready for those opportunities and they see them and they identify them and like you grab it and then you go with it. So I think that's a big difference, right? So I mean, for me, it was like all right, I saw something in that $1,000, and that was a game changer for the rest of my life.
Yeah, you know, I think it's such a good point. And you said the thing, you mentioned it when we were talking about LeBron, which is obviously everyone's going to focus on the incredible like physical traits, the intangibles, being 6'9", like the speed, his injury history, like how far he can jump. Everyone's going to focus on that. They don't focus on the mentality, the strong mentality. And here's the thing that I've seen is like, you can take the same event, the same thing can happen to two different people. And one person takes it a certain way, the other person takes it another way. That person, the one person uses that event to go in this direction. The other person, it's like, oh, that was the reason why my life is like the way it is. There's like this kind of like victim mentality yeah. to it.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of the times, like, people don't want to focus on like the mentality side of it. But let's be real, like a lot of 17-year-old kids, if they had spent $6,000 on like a project or a side hustle and they'd lost $5,000, so they only made $1,000 of revenue from spending $6,000, they might quit then and there. Like, that might be it. And that's the importance of mentality right there. Like, $100 million of value has come from just the mentality, if you think about it.
Yeah, that's what it is. I mean, that's why so few people bubble up right at the end of the day, because most people will go the other direction in term, you know, like just like you said, most people won't look at the $1,000 in revenue. They'll look at they lost $5,000, and that's why you're 100% right. It's like mindset is like 80% of things that happen out there, and like I'm very anti like being a victim, right? I feel like you make your life in many ways. I mean, there are some things that are completely out of control, you know, like some health issues, right? Like stuff comes up like, okay, yeah, like you can't control that necessarily. But I feel like, especially now, and somebody who grew up in like in the 90s, right? And I came to this country as an immigrant from former Soviet Union. You know, today, like you see people, like everybody's kind of feel like it's too easy, easily you calling yourself a victim or somebody did something wrong to you. I think that's all. If you're just focusing on how to be a victim, that's what you're going to excel at. You're going to be a victim. Whether, you know, if you're focused, like your mindset is focused on, all right, I messed something up, let me like try something else. Right, for whatever reason that didn't work out. Not because I'm a victim of something that somebody did to me or the world is going to get against me. It's just like, hey, this didn't work out for whatever reason. Maybe you know the reason. Okay, don't make that mistake again. Try something new. Like, and you just gotta keep trying new and keep building up. I think that makes a huge difference.
Yeah. You know what the quote that comes to mind is like, the person that thinks they can and the person that thinks they can't are both usually correct. Right? Which is like, if you believe you can do it, a lot of the times that's actually how it plays out. Like, you're just going to give it enough time. You're going to give it enough at bats. Like, you're going to go after it enough till that reality actually plays out. The mentality, it's incredibly important. You know what's funny? I think this especially speaks to like the victim mentality thing. In 2023, moving into 2024, it's like, not only, you know, you spoke about times or places where things are being reset. Not only, especially if you live in America or like a lot like developed country, you have access to the internet. Like, that was a great reset in itself.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now you have access. Now we're seeing like the AI stuff come about. I was having a conversation with my dad. I was like, some of the things that people are going to be able to do with AI, like, imagine in human history, it's historically been very difficult to like change your entire family's outcomes in just your lifetime. Now you have kids that are like 19 who are making like life-changing amounts of money because they figured out something on the internet or something with AI. Like, one of the, probably the only time in history so far where you can fundamentally change your whole family's outcomes in the space of like a few years.
Yeah.
Typically that would take generations. Like it's the opportunity is insane in today's age. I'm curious actually, what are your thoughts on like AI? And like, when we talk about, you know, there's opportunity when things are being reset, AI kind of feels like new land. Like it feels like things are kind of being set up as we speak. People are figuring it out and the use cases. I'm curious, like what has kind of, have you seen some opportunities in AI where you're like, oh, some kid just went after this? Or
yeah, listen, I don't think it's just AI. If you look at the grand scheme of things, right? It's always been just like, look at the like nations, right? Even historically speaking, it's not the nations who are the biggest. Who are historically the strongest. It's the ones that would adopt technology because they could leverage technology, right? Because you have less people who could generate a lot more power with less resources. So it's always been the technology that drove, whether it's a, you know, building an empire or building a company or building yourself, right? You have AI, you just had crypto, right? So I think AI is like complete game changer, total reset, because you're talking about how many categories of jobs and industries that are going to get leveled or reset because one kid in somewhere in the basement who could deploy like all this AI framework to do, you know, the job of like 10,000 people. Just using machines, right? Same thing happened with like you said, the internet, right? And then, you know, I levered being able to deploy a ton of ads like very quickly, right? Like I get them live instantly and see what works, it doesn't. And I, you know, the reason I would go to sleep at 6 o'clock in the morning is because I would work on getting all these campaigns up through the night, then I'll wake up in the morning just to see how they performed. Like I was so excited to see all my new campaigns, how they're performing. So like, you know, for me, that was like when search was becoming a thing, right? Like I started doing it before Google existed, and then like, Google became a big thing. And so, and then a bunch of kids made a ton of money on social media, right? As Instagram started popping off, and then you got TikTok and you got Facebook, or Facebook, Instagram, then TikTok. As those platforms start coming out, somebody's taking advantage of those and leveraging those because you get so much access to a big audience from your basement. Somebody's gonna do the same thing with AI, and they're probably already doing it. I mean, for a fact, somebody's doing that with AI already. And that's AI is gonna be it's the reset, like just like the internet was. It's just a totally different level. And you're going to have people who adopt and use it and lever it. And then you're going to have people who are going to get hurt by it. Like, just like even today, a lot of businesses that did very well in the 80s and the 90s, you know, a lot of family owned businesses performed very well. You know, and then once the internet came out, they didn't know how to, like, they didn't really adopt, you know, and they, you know, kind of became the victims of that. So, but there was nothing stopping them from adopting, right? All they have to do is learn it and use it to their advantage, in my opinion.
See, that's so interesting what you said about, like, if you actually look historically and even to this day, the countries that are actually the most developed, the most successful, whatever way you want to say it, aren't the biggest nations. It's actually the ones that just embrace technology the fastest.
Yeah.
That just embrace technology. And it's like, the same thing is playing out even in one individual's life, in people's personal lives. That same thing is playing out, right? Where like, I remember for me, like I'm 25. So when I was growing up, it was like Instagram starting to come and like Facebook and Twitter. And there's people that when those platforms emerge, and I was one of these people, I was like, I'm not a celebrity. Like, I want to post no pictures on Instagram. Like, I'm not interested in that.
Yeah.
And then there's some people that just lean straight into it. Like, the Instagram account was up the next day. they were posting, they were figuring shit out. They're posting stories as soon as that gets released. And it's like, if you can just be fast to it, like if you, and that's what you talk about, like being prepared for your moment. Like once that reset hits and it's the time, in.
And the window of opportunity seems to close up faster and faster, at least in the media space. Like I was able to work the search marketing, like paid search, probably for a good 6 years, right? It was like, that was the window of opportunity. You could have made pretty good money just arbitraging paid search. The next big thing was Facebook. Like you could make real big money arbitraging Facebook for probably 2-3 years. Instagram, maybe a year. TikTok, like people got smarter and smarter about these things. Mm. So that window of opportunity became shorter and shorter, right? But again, those are all like media-based channels. You know, with AI, we might have a little bit more of a window opportunity because it is so new. And yes, there are people who are taking advantage of, like their kids who are coding towards it, businesses that are coding around it. But I think there's like there's the window opportunity that's probably going to be a little longer than that because it is so fresh, it's so new. But yeah, that's interesting. Like I saw that progression in terms of how fast everybody would adopt each one of these platforms and how quickly the opportunity would pretty much close up.
Mm. Yeah, you know what? That's funny, even as I just observe you, I can see like when we, there's like an excitement level you have as like an entrepreneur, just like even watching your face when you talk about like these new opportunities and like even the story of like the 17-year-old Val, like putting all this money on ads, or the 20-year-old Val. I'm curious, like say that we transported the 20-year-old Val who has like all the time and whatever to do this sort of stuff into this day and age. And you see what's happening with AI. Is there anything that like you've specifically noticed in terms of AI where you're like, oh, the 20-year-old Val would have like crushed it on that specific thing? Like I would have been all over that. Like, does anything kind of come to mind in the AI space?
I haven't spent enough time on it to think about it that way. Mm. You know, kind of like grassroots guerrilla, you know, marketing kind of thing.
Yeah.
But that's what I'll probably be doing. Like I'll be trying to figure out how to use it to like automate a lot of things and just make 10,000 of me. Mm. Right. And in terms of whether it's content or it could be content or it could be just something that adopts like a signal in a certain way to deploy media against. Like I don't know, I'll probably be looking at ways to connect the dots and have like AI put out more, like amplify everything. It's somewhere like there's some kind of logic where it's probably a big content play as well. There's ways to get around like, you know, content being and that window is going to be closed fast too, because Google knows that there's a lot of that being that is happening. Mm. And we're going towards a world where like search is going to be AI driven, right? So a lot of the content that you see, for example, in search advertising or on, you know, you already see content being deployed on social media, you know, that window is also going to start closing up very quickly because people are going to be deploying those strategies.
Hmm. You know what's interesting? There's an account on Instagram that I've seen that he's grown his following really fast, literally just speaking about how people can deploy new AI tools on like social media. So getting like using AI to take like viral videos, take the script, slightly improve it or iterate on it, develop a new script, you make a video based on the new script, that goes viral. Like there's so many like,
yeah. And what if you do 10,000 videos like that, right? And they're all pumping a, you know, a service or a product that you're getting paid on, you know, through influencer marketing, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, that's
20-year-old Val right there.
Yeah, exactly.
That is $10 million business right there. You know what? Speaking of 20-year-old Val, I couldn't let you get out of here without telling this story, which is I spoke about reading like these threads that you were writing on my way in. One of the ones that I read this morning, and you know, I'll read out the first tweet and then you can kind of break down the story, because I was like, this is crazy. Like, even the things that you said. So here's how it goes. It goes, look at this kid's face. He was making $500,000 per cold email sent, earned 10 million plus in profit in the first year of his business, sold it and retired. Here's what his story was and how he built it. Can you just can you just kind of break down that story for people? Cause it's like, it was a crazy one. And I found like, as I was reading each tweet, I was like, the second biggest client for Google? I'm like, this is crazy.
It was crazy. You know, building the first business, with the search, was super exciting. And I was like, man, like every year, that's my, the one you're talking about is my second company. But just leading up to that, when I was building the first one, it was so successful. And every year, like, I was like, man, there's no way I could beat last year's numbers. And I beat it, right? And I beat it, and I beat it every year. I was like, man, what's next? Like, Google's gonna, you know, I have to build an agency. You know, I can no longer do this on my own. And then I come across this new thing. And again, I was just playing around with some stuff. And I was like, man, that's interesting. Like, I just saw an outlier, right? I tested it and it works. And I tested it again. And it works again. I was like, holy cow. And it works pretty well. But then so what I did is I just start putting like music related ads on music sites, music, like especially lyric websites. And I noticed that 70% of the traffic on all these lyric sites weren't even US based. Right. So I was like, oh man, like I have a client who promotes music subscription service and they only take US clients. So I was like, let me try just driving the 70% of the other clicks to somebody who does monetize international traffic. Mm. And I did even better than, you know, and then played around with ringtone ads. And then I realized those ringtone ads were like outperforming the subscription music service. So from that, I just like, you know what, let me try to put a little platform together or like a little system that figures out where the clicks are coming from, what music they want to listen to. And then I'll drive them to the right ringtone service all around the world. That business, just like that thing, was so powerful. So I started deploying it on all the music sites, and it wasn't just like lyric sites. I had like, I mean, first there was like a lot of lyrics websites, but then I ended up, that platform was so successful that people like AOL Music, Yahoo Music, Yahoo Radio, like all these radio streaming services, like Last.fm, like all these branded, like, you know, Genius is another big one, right? They all would use the system. And what would happen is the ballsy thing I did was, how do I get access to these lyric websites? All these lyric sites were like owned by some guys like in China or Romania and Russia and Ukraine, like all these crazy areas. And so what I would do is I would send them an email, and because I already knew how successful my ads were. Like, it was the ads that basically says, send this ringtone to your cell. I don't know if you've seen those around.
I literally remember that. That's when I was like, because you included a screenshot of it in your thread. And I was like, I remember seeing this as like a kid, like looking on these sites.
Everybody's seen these, right? I mean, those ads were in front of a half a billion people a month, right? Around the world. And everybody was seeing that. And so I knew how well it performs. So I had the guts to like literally email a website owner and be like, I want to wire you 50,000 tomorrow, 10,000, 100,000. Like, I've made offers like just like that. I'll wire you the money just to try the ad for a week. It was definitely fun. Can't deny.
Sounds fun. Yeah. 10 million profit. That's pretty good.
Yeah. I wasn't, and you know what? I wasn't like, I was making all this money. I wasn't really, I was so focused on just keep growing it. Like, I wasn't partying. I wasn't really
just locked in.
Yeah. Yeah. I was very locked in. Like, just wanted to make, it was just like a game, you know?
Yeah.
And I was kind of addicted to it.
Yeah. I'm curious. So the links are on these lyric websites. When someone clicks on the link, where does it go? And then how Like, how is the money being made once they click on the link?
Yeah, so what I built was this thing, this pretty simple technology, but it was called Ringtone Matcher. So you would actually click on a link, and that link would actually, then they will figure out where you're from, like location-wise, what carrier whether you have Verizon or T-Mobile or whatever, what music you were looking, and all that information would be put together and sent, and then we would decide to where to send you to, like which ringtone provider, because each ringtone provider had, like, for example, one would only support T-Mobile customers and they only had music from like EMI. And then you had another one who supported Verizon and AT&T and they had Warner. And then somebody else had like this and that combination. Like, and then and these are US guys. And then you do that in 60 other countries too. Like, every country had its own ringtone providers. So my system, like, basically I aggregated them all into one place and figure out who does what well. And so based on like your variables, I would send that traffic over. And it was a bunch of just simple, like, you don't need to be a coder to do it. All I did is I just kind of like, it was just like if and then logic, right? Like, I just said, okay, if you're X, Y, and Z, then send that person to that user. I mean, it seemed a lot more complicated than that. And later on, it did get a lot more complicated than that, you know, once we kind of had more technology built behind it. But in the beginning, it was just as simple as that. And I had all these ringtone providers basically paying me a bounty every time I sent them a customer.
So, okay. So like, 10-year-old Callum is in London. He clicks on the link. I'm going to get the ringtone provider that services London, T-Mobile or Orange or whatever the carrier is. And then they're going to send me what? They're going to send me like a deal or like an offer that I can then purchase. And then once I purchase, I guess that's making their money and then they're paying you. Yeah. So that's like the loop.
Exactly.
Okay. Got you. Okay. That's interesting. You know what's... one of the interesting things you said is like, it was cool coming out of your first business that it was even more successful in the second business. So in my mind, when I hear that, that's like, there's a certain level of learning, right? Like, there's, you're actually getting, you spoke about it, it's like, it's a game. You're getting better at the game as you get more reps. Like, you're iterating and it's getting better. The results are getting huger, bigger. I'm curious, when you reflect on it now, like, what was kind of the common thread? What was the learnings from the first business that went into the second business that made the second business perform even better? Or was it just the opportunity? Like, what was...
You know, it's hard to sometimes say which one was the second and what's now third and fourth, because like, once I launched that, actually, then I started realizing this is year 2009. And I'm like, man, like looking at our analytics and I'm seeing like, mobile traffic popping off, right? And this is like, the iPhone just came out, and like, what is this, like, web mobile traffic, what's that? I was like, all right, let's build a business around that. So I launched a company called Mobile Fuse a year after we launched the Home Fuse, which is the ringtone business. And then that business I still own. That's like, and that became even bigger than the ringtone company. Like, it's still around. It's like, it's a real successful company. And and then about a year after that, I start seeing all these lyric websites and all these music sites, and I'm like noticing, okay, I got this text ads. They're performing very well. Like, what, you know, I already got all the sites. What do I do next? I'm looking all around and I see all these ugly banners. And at the time, like, it would be like Google AdSense ads, and they'll just be like a bunch of ugly text, like with random crap on it, right? I was like, man, how do I bring that to brands? Because I got all these music enthusiasts, right, looking up lyrics, and they're just showing these ugly ads to them. How do I? So I call up a few advertisers, and they're like, we're not gonna touch this thing because all these lyric sites are unlicensed, and that's the reason that all these owners were like in Ukraine's and Russia and all these places, right? Like, huh, interesting. So I went to all of them and I said, like, guys, you're making a ton of money now, like the ringtone ads. I could make even more money by taking all your space and bringing it to brands. And But like, you got to do one thing. You got to pay. You got to license your websites. You got to go legit, and we'll build basically a media network to help you guys sell more advertising to premium advertisers. And they went for it. Like, I was able to convince everybody. Like you got to do this. So the whole space, the whole lyrics category, whom the music industry has been going after for decades, trying to shut them all down and close down their servers and all. That's why they were all in, like, again, in China and stuff, was basically transformed overnight because I just said, like, guys, you can make a lot more money being licensed. And so we launched a new company based on that. It's called Tone Media. And all I did is I aggregated all those sites. And I said, all right, now they're all licensed. They're all legitimate sites. All the space that's all these banners are available to advertisers. So I went to premium advertisers with that. So actually, we became the second largest music property in the world.
So basically taking these fragmented, that's interesting. Because even when I I look at NFL stuff, I watch it online sometimes. I stream it. Is like, you'll see that, like, what they show in Cleveland, they'll probably show like the Cleveland Browns playing, but then in New York, they're showing the Giants. So it's like, even though it's national, and then you have some games that are like nationally televised, and so it is like these local markets, right? But then I'm assuming it will be like the Fox Sports in Cleveland is showing Cleveland Browns. So it's like local. So basically, I guess that's what like companies like Fox or like these big.
It's an aggregation. Like, yeah, they aggregated all these guys under one umbrella.
Yeah. You know what? There's one thing when I'm listening to your story, it stands out. And I have to ask about it, which is the convincing part, like convincing. And you even said it. You're like, I don't know. Like, I managed to just convince. With the lyric websites, it was like the lyric websites. But then it was more than that. It was like, not only convincing lyric websites to kind of go like in a more like legal and like professional route, it was also getting these like big brands and advertisers on board to then work with these websites. I feel like that's actually like a very underrated part of what you did, which is like, it's not just the strategy, and then it wasn't just the having the hustle and like building a way to implement that. It was actually convincing these fragmented players to kind of come together and work with you, or convincing huge brands who typically, if we're just being honest, don't really love to do things in new ways to like, oh, okay, instead of deploying that amount of spend, I don't know, on like traditional TV ads or radio, why don't you go and use our network and you'll be on like these lyric websites? Can you kind of speak about that skill set, like how do you even think about like getting someone on board, like getting someone to do something?
Yeah, I feel like once I feel like something is the right thing to do in terms of like for the other party, I can be pretty relentless about it, you know. And I'm actually not a good salesperson. I think what I'm good at is identifying what is the right thing for somebody to do, whether it's a client or a partner or whatever, what is good for them. And when they say no to that, that just triggers me, because like I know you're wrong. Like, you don't know what the hell you're missing, right? And so I could be pretty relentless in that regard. Like, you know, getting all these websites to agree to, you know, essentially they have to settle with all the music companies and pay them certain penalties to settle, and then pay a licensing fee for lyrics for the rest of their lives, right? That was a huge, huge thing to convince them to do. But I knew that I could, you know, I could make them perform better if they were actually legitimate. And so that one was, you know, tough. We got some guys on board pretty quickly. And then once you show that, hey, like, you got all these guys on board and look how well they're doing, everybody starts, a lot of people start following that, right? On the advertiser side, I mean, at that point, I did have a sales force that we hired to do the selling. So that was actually not, I'm not going to take all the credit for that. But we did have to convince them why they need to be looking at these like music enthusiasts, So what we did actually is at the time there was some like there was a lot of like privacy conversations around cookies, like how much cookies are tracking you, you know, all the stuff you see in the media. So I was like, all right, you know what? We have like all these music enthusiasts, right? And every person, you could kind of tell what they're going to buy or what they're going to do, what their lifestyle is like based on the music they listen to. So my big, like one of the big selling points, aside from like our size, was you could actually target people based on their music preferences instead of using cookies, right? So like, okay, you basically like, you don't need to use use cookies to target people. And we basically actually had a patent filed. I don't know. I sold the company before it was granted. I don't know if they actually ever finished with the process or not. But I filed for a patent. That's what we called tone targeting. And what that did is it created this massive index of if you listen to this, like if you listen to the Beatles, you're 3 times more likely to be a pet owner, or 2 times more likely, whatever it was, right? If you listen to Avril Lavigne, you are more likely to be in a market for X, right? Like whatever. So we had all this information based on. So I mean, that's how we sold them. Like we said, like listen, there's a new way of targeting people. You don't need to use cookies and privacy, and you know, kind of like breach people's privacy or get too involved in privacy. Like you could just use music as a driver of what people you want to reach.
Yeah.
So that's how I sold it. And then like more recently, actually, when I started the Jocalia, which is a jewelry focused company, you know, our goal is to get like independent jewelers and to build, we're building a collective. So like we're putting them all under one umbrella. The first thing that, and I'm coming from like the ad tech and data tech world, right? Everything we're building is about utilizing the data that they have. And without that, I can't help you if I don't see what's going on in your store. I don't see your sales. I don't see customers, what they're doing, like cohort analytics, like all that kind of stuff. Like I need data, access to your data. And the first thing we were hearing from these jewelers when I was like opening the started the company is like, nobody's going to give you this data. Everybody's like so protected of their customer lists and their sales information. And like, plus you're also kind of selling product into the stores. Like, why would we share all this data? And I was like, man, that's gonna be tough. So I had to like convince someone why this is the right way to go about it. And you know, and a couple of people believed into it and went for it and saw massive results, like in terms of like sales. We created these events that generated like, you know, a single store could just generate like $250,000 in a weekend, just doing one event. And I would use data and all this, you know, and plug it into all my, like, I use my experience in terms of like advertise, you know, how to advertise that local store. And once others start hearing those stories, like, oh man, I want some of that sauce, you know? So, and word gets around and like, now it became like a normal thing for, family owned stores to just like open up access to their data, because this is kind of like it's not just because like my company does it, but it's kind of the new world you live in. You're not using your data to make your business better. You're just gonna be like another victim, you know, to what the world is today, and which is all data driven.
Mm. You know what? It's interesting, like what you say about you never felt like you were a great salesperson, but you were relentless. And I love that, because I think there's a lot of people that they don't. Like even the thought of sales kind of makes them feel like a bit icky. Like they just don't feel like they're salespeople. But I feel like anyone can be relentless. You can just keep going at it more than someone else.
The next guy, yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? I think in a lot of moments, that's been kind of my strategy. It's like, it's going to be more relentless, more persistent, and it's going to be inevitable because I'm just going to keep going until it works. I think when you're wired that way, there can be moments of being discouraged. There can be moments of like, you feel like you're continuing to like kind of bang at the wall and it's just not breaking through. And I'm sure you have those moments in your story where it was like, it was just frustrating that you could see such a huge opportunity and the people that could make it happen and benefit weren't saying yes yet. And so I want to give some juice to the person out there that is just relentlessly pursuing and they're like just waiting for that. They're putting all the time and preparation to get that one yes, where like this person says yes, everything after that is different. Like it kind of changes everything. I'm curious, when you just reflect on your story, is there a moment that jumps out where it was like, that was the one yes, where that person being on board, everything else after that was going to be different? Like that was a breakthrough moment.
Yeah. Actually, it's like, you know, people, or like sometimes you question yourself, like, well, why would somebody say yes to this? Right? Like you want to tell them, you want to approach them with something or an offer or a deal or a partnership, but then like you're like starting negotiating against yourself and you're like, how would they say yes to that? Right? Does that like people like you get that, right?
You and talk then, yourself out of it.
Out of it, yeah, just because like, well, why would another person do that? And I remember when I just started the ringtone thing and I just saw how big that's gonna could be. And I remember like one of the ringtone providers would actually work through a network, right? And it was like a big company. Funny thing is I'm like best friends with that owner of that founder of that company now. But I remember thinking, like, this is, I know this, like if I start putting these ringtone ads everywhere, that network will see it and their employees will see it. And next thing I know, they're just gonna like take it to everybody. So I had, yes, I had these. So first thing I did, I was like, I had these agreements that my publishers can't circumvent me, but I knew I couldn't control it. Like again, just because of all where they're located, right? I couldn't really control them like legally or anything like that. So, and I needed to get a ringtone provider that was working with that network. So I was like, man, I'm gonna ask that network for exclusivity for like all music sites or lyric sites, right? To do ringtones. Cause they kind of approached me like about ringtones, like to promote more of them. And I was afraid to do it. I didn't ask him for months because I was afraid to do it. And at some point, I just like, I don't know why I did reach out. I think I was actually just like hanging out with one of the account managers because I was doing some other business with them, with like outside of the ringtone stuff. And he's like, man, how do we grow more? I was like, well, we could grow more if I get this like exclusivity on this ringtone thing that we don't really do much to get together. He's like, I'll give it to you. I'll make sure it happens. So within a day, I had this exclusivity from this big company that they won't compete with me. And I just felt like at that point, I could go to all the websites, all those music sites without being worried about this big network
competing,
right? And maybe they would have never, maybe it wouldn't even matter to them. Maybe it would. But I remember being like scared to ask. Right. And since that moment, I feel like you shouldn't be afraid to ask or just pursue something. What's the worst that's going to happen? Mm. They say no. Like, okay, so you tried and the worst thing that happens is like you just get a no and that's it. Or you could also try again, you know, like try to convince them, right? Be relentless.
Yeah. Okay, cool. No, I guess, okay. So to close then, I guess, taking it back to right at the beginning of our conversation, we spoke about, you know, there's some periods where you go on offense, there's some periods where you go on defense. So back to like the 20-year-old Val and like the advice that you would give from the perspective and the vantage point that you're at now, you just looking forward in the next year had to predict. And obviously it's a prediction, so, you know, we're not going to get everything 100% accurate. But if you were like, okay, for this next year, kind of deciding between, do I go on offense? Do I go on defense? Like, what kind of season do you think we're in?
I mean, if I'm 20-year-old Val, I'm always on offense. I'm too young. Like, I have too much time ahead of me. So I'm allowed to make mistakes. And so I'm always on offense if I'm 20 years old. I mean, that's probably my answer is
it's always offense.
Yeah, go offense if you're young, especially. You know, you gotta be a little more careful when you're older, and you have little, you know, you gotta make like more calculated, risks get more calculated over time as you get older, because you have less time to fix or correct those mistakes, right? Like, you can't go all in if you're 7 years old and you got like a nest egg. can't go all in on crypto with that, you know, like it's not a good idea.
Yeah.
Because you might not have enough time to, you know, make it back.
Yeah. Okay. What about, okay, so we've got the perspective of a 20-year-old Val. What if I'm a bit older, maybe a decade older, and I have some responsibilities, but that said, I'm still looking for my moment of like, I can really gain a lot of market share. I can really make a lot of progress in a short amount of time. Like, what would you say to that person? What season are we in?
Look, I think that no matter what age you are, you're always, you should be always on the offense for bettering yourself, right? So if it's learning, like just going and figuring out a new skill or a new potential business, like a new site, like you've got a side hustle going on, you should always be like attacking at that. I don't think we're talking about like going on offense financially, right? You're not saying like, hey, let's, you know, should we spend more next year? You're saying like, should I spend time on something? I think that's the most valuable thing that people forget. Like, time is a lot more valuable than money a lot of times, especially when things are being reset, right? So if you got something you're doing full time, there's no reason not to be on offense mentally and with your time, in addition to what you're doing on, you know, full time. So like weekends and nights, like put that time in to work on whatever craft or whatever idea you have, or it could be anything, like, you know, whether you're arbitraging something or you're connecting some businesses together to make them better and you somehow like participate in that upside, or you're figuring out how to, you know, build a new website or an app, or it could be anything, like, you know, leveraging AI to do some stuff for you that could generate videos for influencer marketing. I think when it comes to your time, I think you should be always on the offense. I don't see why you wouldn't.
No, I love that. I love that as a place to end, which is like, in the beginning you even said it, which is in deciding like on what to work on like on what to deploy like a strategy against, it's also about a key question that sometimes people don't ask, especially when you're just looking to make money, is what do I actually care about? Like, what do I enjoy doing and working on? Because you're just going to do that thing more. Like, it sets up the foundation correctly. And so if your full-time thing isn't the thing that you enjoy working on as well, then you should always be on offense. Like, if it's only a side hustle or it hasn't even started yet, like in terms of your time, your energy, your mental, like you should be on offense. I love that as a message to end.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sweet. So thank you for coming on, man.
Thanks for having me, man. This was fun.
If you really enjoy this podcast and you want to be the first to see when we drop an episode, please subscribe to the channel. It helps us immeasurably. Road to 100K. Before I leave you guys, I need to drop one last gem. That is the sponsor of today's show, Free Agency. Free Agency represents and manages talent in the tech industry. They find you a dedicated talent agent that will help you find and win top of market roles. That talent agent is your career quarterback. They understand you and your career goals. They will help you get interviews at top firms, and they will make sure you get a top of market salary. So, you want to take your career to the next level? Free Agency is a company that you need to take a look at. Go to the link in the description. Thank me later. Peace.